Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite. Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Hello, everyone. This is the Freelancers Show. And today we have a special guest, Jason Montoya.
Hello. Good to meet you.
And I'm Petra. And we've also got Joel Shelbert here today.
Hey, everybody. And this is Joel.
Sorry, I just completely cut you off then, Joel. That was so rude of me. And so today we're going to be talking about freelancing in the midst of the pandemic and the type of pivots that people have had to make.
When I'm building a new product, G2I is the company that I call to help me find a developer who can build it. G2I is a hiring platform run by engineers that matches you with React, React Native, GraphQL, and mobile developers that you can trust. Whether you are a new company building your first product or an established company that wants additional engineering help, G2I has the talent you need to accomplish your goals. Go to g2i.co to learn more about what G2I has to offer. In my experience, G2I has linked me up with experienced engineers that can fit my budget. And the G2I staff are friendly and easy to work with. They know how product development works and can help you find the perfect engineer for your stack. Go to g2i.co to learn more about G2I.
So, Jason, would you mind letting us know a little bit about what you do and how you are able to talk about this topic?
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you so much for having me on the show. I appreciate it and look forward to sharing. Again, my name is Jason Scott Montoya. I'm actually from Arizona in the United States, and I moved to Atlanta, Georgia when I was 20. Which was about 15 years ago in 2005, me and my wife, we got married, went on our honeymoon. The day we got back from Hawaii, we packed up everything and moved across the country to Atlanta, pursue our ambitions and various dreams. Had a marketing company from 2007 to 2014, ended up shutting that down. As I shut it down, I didn't know what I was going to do next, but through that transition process, freelancing found me. And I decided to reciprocate that relationship, and I said, I'll take it. So I leaned into freelancing in 2014 and really figured out, you know, who I was, what I was going to offer. And then in 2015, really figure out how to master that freelancing as a vocation. So I ended up, taking the business lessons I learned in my company that I shut down and applying them to the freelancing, and I became successful at that. And other freelancers started asking me, well, how are you successful? How are you navigating these different challenges? And so from there, you know, I started coaching other freelancers. They said you should write a book. So in 2017, I published my first book called Path of the Freelancer, An Actionable Guide to Flourishing in Freelancing, which traverses eight different achievements that freelancers need to both accomplish, you know, sustain in their craft to be successful. And recently, as these crises, you know, the economic most specifically has affected freelancers and myself, I've realized that to be successful as a freelancer means we have to expect a crisis around every corner. And by doing that, we actually are quite prepared, hopefully, for the big crisis that we're now all facing. So that's kind of my story in a nutshell. There's obviously a lot more to it. I specifically work in the B2B marketing space, working with businesses, small businesses between 5 and 50 people, e-commerce, B2B. Some tend to be in the training or technology sectors. And I essentially help them, grow their audience. So track more visitors to their website, convert those visitors to leads, nurture those leads into customers, and turn those customers into loyal customers. So, and I do that through a variety of content marketing, content library building, and optimization. And that's kind of a little bit of me. I am married. Like I mentioned, I have 5 kids between the ages of 1 and 11, if I hopefully got the numbers right there. And so it's an adventure with that many kids, especially now that we're all sheltering in place. So
I was about to say you've had a really busy 6 years in terms of your business life, and now that you've said how many kids you've got, I'm thinking you've really had a busy last few years.
It's definitely been crazy. I've got a lot more going on than I should have, I think.
I was thinking as well, when you've written a book on the topic, all of a sudden everyone thinks you're the expert, and I'm sure you are an expert, but then all of a sudden coronavirus hits and you probably have a few new books in you now.
Yeah, for sure.
Now all of a sudden you've learned a whole lot of things that might not have been there when you wrote your first book. I mean, how have you found that? Have you suddenly got a whole lot of new ideas for your books?
Well, interesting. I think what I would say to that is, you know, principles at the core have a way of transcending the circumstances that we go through. And so principally speaking, I think a lot of that seems to still apply. But to your point, what's probably most applicable is the stories and the experiences and even the perspective, maybe a richer perspective of those principles in action in certain contexts. So I think that's probably, I have a lot more content to kind of to wrap around those principles than I did before the crisis. And there is, you know, there's a lot of challenges and negatives with the whole situation, but there is a lot of learning to just, even in just watching what's happening, how people react, how they respond, what they do or don't do. And so that's, it's one thing to have a kind of a theory or a hypothesis and kind of test that out, but to see it kind of lived out on stage and in a global sense is a whole nother layer of learning, I think. So I don't know if that answers your question or not.
Definitely. Well, it's incredible how many, and we're going to be talking about pivoting today, but it's incredible how many changes people are having to make and so rapidly as well. And I'm actually reading a book at the moment by Dan Kennedy. It's No BS Management and something or other. Sorry, Dan. Okay. I'll have to bring it up. I'll bring it up and I'll put the link in the show notes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm just up to this part at the moment where he says the most dangerous, the most dangerous number in business is 1, because if you have 1 of anything, then you could be in a situation where if you've got 1 team member that does a critical skill, for example, if that person leaves, then all of a sudden you've got to scramble to replace that person. If you've got 1 distribution strategy, then if some crisis occurs, then you need to find a new way of distributing. If you've got 1 marketing platform, again, if that marketing platform shuts down or they shut you down, then you're in trouble. So when it comes to this coronavirus, I think that coronavirus will have caught out a lot of small businesses especially, but also large ones, who, because they were small, they only had 1 of something, and I think that would have caught them out. So I'm interested to hear about some of the pivots that you've been through or that some of your clients have been through since the coronavirus has started, and how just how that occurred, like if you've got a little bit of
Definitely. So they're kind of there's the one thing and then there's the pivot. And so let me talk about the one thing first, because I very much agree with you. And and that's the interesting thing, that I think the opportunity for freelancers right now is that we tend, in most cases, freelancers tend to have multiple clients, as an example. And someone who's employed by a traditional employer, if they get fired, they lose all their income. But if I lose a client in this situation, I only lose a portion of my income, assuming I've got multiple clients. And so I faced that early on in the pandemic. Was actually had a client that was affected by it actually early in January, because they were they had stuff that they shipped in from China, and that affected, you know, their supply chain, and that affected their operations. And so I had a client on the front end where I kind of knew something was happening here. Although I couldn't have known to what degree, it was more of seemed like a small disruption. And then another client, you know, fell off, and all of a sudden, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 worth of my income on a monthly basis is now gone. But because I had, you know, about a dozen clients, it was a portion of my income, but it wasn't crippling. It was just something that a challenge that I had to overcome. And with other financial buffers that I had created before that, it also gave me additional margin to lean into. So I definitely love the idea of that you're describing in terms of the one. I also think about one of the things that I do in my freelancing is I limit the amount of work that any one client can do with me. So I won't let one client do more than about 40% of my total income. And if they hit that, then I'm capping them. So even if they want to use more of me, I'll say no, or, you know, let's find another freelancer to help with these things that I don't either have the capacity, or maybe they're not my specialty. And so that's one of the things that I've done to protect myself from essentially getting a client that does want to work with me and be that one, but I don't want that risk that comes with it. So that's the one side of it. On the pivot side, because it started to affect me right away, as I imagine it did everyone, there are a couple things that I did right away because I didn't know how this was going to unfold. And all of a sudden I had a couple clients that I was losing. And so I had a little bit of extra time, and that's where I actually launched more formally my podcast. So I have a podcast called Grow Your Life, where I share systems and stories to work better and live smarter. And I had actually planned to launch that next year. And because of this, I was like, well, I'm probably going to have a lot more time on my hands, so I better launch this now. So I did that. And a lot of it is I'm interviewing other people through that, and they're sharing their stories and systems. I also put together a webinar on freelancing in the pandemic. I put together a webinar. I wrote a second book, which I published last year, and it's for small business owners. And so I did another webinar, you know, as a small business owner, how to navigate this situation. And so I put those out there, and my next step was, all right, I'm going to put together some courses. And you know, I essentially was going to build an online business if I needed to. And my business, I had a little bit of drop off, but then I also had some stuff picked back up. And so I didn't necessarily have the cliff that I was expecting, but it did help me to start to create some things that I probably would have eventually done, but accelerated the process. So that's an example for me. I have a client who in the e-commerce space who sells a lot of network infrastructure and you know, cabling and wiring. And a lot of that stuff is for businesses, you know, in a large building. You know, you have a large building and they need, you know, fiber run and all this stuff. And all of a sudden everyone's working from home. And so they're having to adapt their business. And so they started to produce safety supplies, you know, masks and sanitizers and trying to get that stuff when it wasn't available. And so now you have this company that's selling what they normally sell. And then they have this whole other thing that has almost nothing to do with it, but that their customers still need. And they're trying to balance that. I have another client that was working, that works with businesses to augment them, essentially an outsourced financial department, so a virtual CFO and accounting and back office, and they use some cloud-based software, ERP software. And what was happening with the crisis was the government, the federal government in America passed, you know, the CARES Act, which provided these loans for small businesses that could be forgivable if they used it in certain ways. And so we put together a program that essentially we would, they were going to help companies apply for that funding and then also track the expenses and how they were sent so that when it came to the giving it, getting it forgiven, they could, they would be more likely to get it forgiven and they would have everything ready to go. So if the bank or the SBA or the government had any questions, they could answer those. So we had to launch this product and then create a landing page and create some email workflows to automate, you know, the scheduling of these appointments and then the follow-up and all of this stuff. So set up ads, Google ads, you know, all the social media and whatnot. But, and there are other examples that I could share, but those are, that's, you know, some ways that I've had to pivot and then a couple that my clients have had. And there's definitely a lot more to it than what I've said, but that kind of gives you an idea.
It's actually been a huge opportunity in many ways because the businesses that have had a downturn in their business have had to start marketing and really think about their marketing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes marketing can take a little bit of a pause or go on the back seat when businesses just hit capacity and the operational troubles start to, you know, become more important, I guess, because once you've got the number of customers that you want, then all of a sudden you've got to deliver all the services or deliver the products. So it's interesting. All the businesses that have had a downturn have had to pivot their marketing, like you've said. And I think there's been a real resurgence of activity in the content marketing space, mm-hmm. but then also like new courses and new offerings. And like I've had clients that have done the same. They were in a service business that had been shut down because they had to have contact with people. And they've gone out and created courses or they've created ways to do it through Zoom. And there's been a plethora of new Zoom type of services like marketing, networking services and things like that. It's been really interesting. I'm sure there's been other people that have been writing and starting podcasts and things too, like you described. There might be a whole lot of books coming out next year. All the people that have been writing books.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like in a lot of ways it gives people margin. So if things did slow down and you didn't necessarily pick that back up on a client side, then it does give you the opportunity to create a course, write a book, blog. You know, I've also seen with some of my clients that there are things I've been telling them to do for a while in terms of their marketing and messaging and you know, things are what they are and they're busy and what it is, but now they're going, maybe we should do those things that you've been telling us to do for a while and now we can do them. And so there's definitely an opportunity to lean into that, to kind of do things that were maybe neglected, to accelerate things that were already in the pipeline. And so that's exciting because there's just a lot of new opportunities. In a lot of ways, it feels like there is I kind of imagine the race has sort of been reset and everyone's at the starting line. So everyone gets a chance to sort of, what are you going to do with that opportunity where there's been this giant reset and how are you going to unfold? So those are, I definitely agree with that and appreciate that point of view.
I found it kind of fun, actually. I've gone through periods of staring at my screen, wondering what am I going to do now?
And then excitement and paralysis.
Yay, let's just get things done. Yeah. So this, because I made the mistake of having one big client. Mm. I didn't think that it was going to end up being so much of my business. But at the same time, what I found was that operationally, I had a client that had 20 different, they were an umbrella client and they had 20 different clients under the one roof.
Okay.
Or more actually, more than that.
So you were working with the different groups with it under the big one?
Yeah. So I was working with the main group, but I was essentially working for each of those, 20 or 25 or however many there were.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Businesses, but I was dealing with the main group. Mm-hmm. So then because they acted as a block,
yeah,
essentially that meant that I lost all of my business overnight.
Oh, wow.
And so that was definitely a mistake because I was a sucker for that problem of one.
Mm.
And at the time, it was the right thing for me to do because it really helped me build my business. And I needed that cash flow,
yeah,
to help accelerate my business.
Yeah.
But it's not something that you want to have long term where you've got one, mm-hmm, core client, because if any kind of economic change or sociological change or just they don't like you anymore or whatever it might be, all of a sudden all of your business is gone overnight. So yeah, it's not a good place to be.
But it probably is something we all have to learn. You know, the reason I feel that is because I've gone through what you're describing.
Yeah. And what I found actually was when I had the one big client, that client took up so much extra of my time, that then I wasn't able to invest the time into finding new clients. And so at the back of my head, I knew that this was a problem. And so I'd be saying, oh, I need more clients. I need more clients. And it would be this kind of persistent worry.
Yeah.
But it just wasn't happening. Mm. And then when that client had to pause, then all of a sudden this new activity turned out to be the most exciting time because since then, over the last 3 months, I have literally brought on 13 new clients.
Wow.
So I've pretty much replaced that business. Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
And it's now diversified, which is awesome.
I know, it's now diversified. So, and I even got to the point where that large client has been asking me to lower the price and I've been able to turn around and say, well, actually that's not suitable for me.
In fact, I'm going up this time.
Yeah, that's right. Whereas, you know, back a year ago, I probably wouldn't have accepted a really low price, but at the same time, I would have done whatever I could to make them happy.
And whereas now,
go ahead.
Kind of a classic thing with like having a big client like that is over time, you tend to like be able to do that work and get paid well for it. And you get more intertwined and you learn more and more. So they see you're useful, maybe pass you a little more work because big companies, big clients, there's always almost infinite amount of work to do. And then it reaches this almost like tipping point where it's in your head. You're wrapped up anticipating what their next problem might be or what you can do. And that's really useful for them. It really helps them. And it helps you be like, you know, a good provider to them.
Yeah.
But at that point, I know what you're talking about. You get to that point and it's hard to then realize, oh, I still have my own company that's going to need marketing and new clients in the future. And it's so easy once you kind of hit that threshold of you're really engaged and thinking about them all the time to like
go
back and remember other things you still need to do.
Yeah. Yeah. It is interesting because there's that benefit, you know, it's the risk and the opportunity. But having that kind of that mindset of looking for opportunities for improvement and that, you know, this idea that I think a lot of times freelancers do these one-time projects and we should be thinking about how do we turn that one-time project into an ongoing engagement, which is very much what you're describing. But at the same time, we get more entrenched with them. And if we get too entrenched, then it can cost us like it did with you, Petra. So,
well, the other thing is I had I have my clients on a month-to-month basis when coronavirus hit. And so it was very easy for clients to pull out. But the new clients that I've brought on, I've been offering them month-to-month if they pay an upfront fee.
Yeah.
Or they can take a six-month term. So they've got one choice or the other. And having a setup fee, which to be honest, I think is perfectly fair because that setup fee, that setup work still needs to be done. And if they were to pull out after a month, I'd be,
you don't want to be compensated for your time.
Yeah, that's right. So you've got a choice of month to month, but you could pay the setup fee or a 6 month term. And every person has picked the 6 month term.
Okay.
So sometimes I think as freelancers, we tend to be a little bit too cautious about, oh, what if people aren't going to like it, blah, 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 blah. And we actually downsell ourselves. But if you actually offered the thing, then it might actually be what people want. So that was a big pivot for me. That was actually, I hadn't offered 6 month terms at all. That was actually a big pivot for me. And it's only a pricing pivot, but still that made a big difference.
Well, and I think that's what's beautiful about freelancing is, you know, each situation like that, we learn a little bit something new. And we apply it to our business, and then it makes our business a little stronger and a little better. And then we learn another thing, we apply it. And over time, we end up with a really strong business because we apply all these principles that are timeless to our work. And that's where I think it's exciting and both and prosperous as a freelancer, you know, because the first few years of freelancing can be quite challenging to get it up and running and going. But once you get to that place where we're really able to sustain it and grow it, that's pretty exciting.
Hey folks, this is Charles Maxwood, and over the last few years, I've gotten to know a lot of great people within the Microsoft community, and specifically in the .NET area. One of our guests from JavaScript Jabber, Sean Claybo, actually reached out to me and said he wanted to start a show on .NET, and there are a ton of people out there that I feel like sometimes get neglected in the .NET space. So if you're one of those folks, you've been listening to maybe one or two of the other .NET focused or Microsoft focused podcasts for a while and thought, well, where's the devchat.tv style podcast for me in .NET? You can find it. It's at adventuresin.net. .NET is spelled out D-O-T-N-E-T. Adventuresin.net.com. Go check it out today.
Have any of your clients had to change their service offering completely or sell a different product?
Yeah. So like I mentioned with the e-commerce company, I mean, they went from selling this network infrastructure to safety supplies, you know, in 30 days. And, you know, the owner isn't quite an entrepreneur and he's probably going to, you know, end up launching a new business, you know, with a new brand under that. And then there'll be two businesses. Right. So that was pretty dramatic. But the thing that what's interesting about that, and I can share some other examples too, but the one of the strengths of that business is really about supply chain, you know, pulling in supplies from overseas, having it made in different countries, you know, and so they have those made and then they have them shipped in. The product itself is almost doesn't matter. And so if they can do the same thing for a different product to solve a certain problem, then they're already skilled at that. And so that allowed them to, I think, pivot a lot quicker than someone who didn't know any of that stuff that wanted to try and get into that business. So they had a lot of the tools at their fingertips, which was an interesting thing. I do have, you know, another client that worked with a lot of restaurants, and the restaurants and the retail industry has been hammered, and restaurants are either closing or failing or having to just dramatically pivot. And so that's been a challenge for them because, well, they've been targeting restaurants and now they can't. And so, you know, they happen to have a couple other verticals they worked with to diversify their own business client base and that we could pivot towards. But that definitely, you know, made it really challenging for them. So yeah, it's interesting just to see, you know, how these things are affecting different businesses. I have a friend who works at a company that helps schools do fundraising events. So they're physical events at the schools. You know, you've probably heard of things, you know, where they do a run-a-thon and raise money for the school or whatever it might be. And so they have these really exciting events and they're having to reinvent their business because schools closed down and We don't even know how they're going to open in the fall. And if they do, you know, what does that mean? And I imagine they're not going to be doing big events. So they're having to figure out, how do they rebuild their business through an online model that can help the schools raise funds, because the schools and the kids in those schools still need the different support that they were getting from those fundraisers. So that's, you know, another interesting example. I don't know, have you experienced any interesting stories on your own journey?
Yeah, I've got a similar one actually that I'm thinking of when you say that. I met a woman the other week who she was selling local produce through large events where people were catching up and like sharing plates of food.
Okay, yeah.
And that business model wasn't really able to be launched. No. Yeah. So she's had to make some substantial pivots towards an online model.
Yeah.
Which is really difficult when it comes to sharing food. And I'm sure it's the same with these fun runs and things as well. Some businesses are easier to pivot than others.
Well, and I think what's really helpful for me, and your friend's example with the food is one way to do this, is think about what are the underlying points of value. So when you think about a restaurant, what is the value that they provide? Well, one is they provide a place for you to meet with somebody and to congregate and to facilitate. They also provide the value of collecting food, preparing that food, and delivering that food to you. So you have all these points of value. So how could that translate? So I had a freelancer I talked to about a month or two ago, and she was an audio engineer. So she helped with the recording of audio for movies, and movies have stopped filming. And so she didn't have any work. But she loved, you know, working with sound and music, but she also had a heart for helping people. And so through that discussion, we kind of learned that there are a lot of funerals that are happening right now, but people aren't able to actually go to the funeral because of the social distancing. And so we talked about perhaps she could create a service to help bring this music and sound to create a digital memorial that people could enjoy and appreciate, but also mourn and process the death of their loved one. And so it's completely different than what she was doing, but it's taking kind of the core pieces of what she loved and what she was good at and translating it to the new paradigm. And I think that's what I've learned.
That's an incredible pivot. Actually, I really like that one. That's fantastic. It's the type of thing where 12 months ago, you would have never thought that that's what you'd be doing.
Exactly.
But being able to use your skills in a way that's so powerful for people and quickly at that too. And one of the benefits we have as freelancers is that we can pivot quickly. We're not so bogged down in standards and process and HR that it's so hard to turn the ship around. We can just go, I'm going to change today.
Yeah. And I do, I don't envy companies or larger companies, especially because they can't turn. It's a big ship and it's hard to turn that. And sometimes if you can't pivot quick enough or you can't pivot strong enough, it can mean that you don't make that transition, and that can be very difficult. And so I think as freelancers, we just have this wonderful opportunity to kind of reinvent ourselves if we want to. And, I've talked to a few freelancers where I said, you know, if you could do anything, like if you could choose any vocation, if you could be a different type of freelancer, you know, when you have a client, that one client or a lot of clients, we are a little bit trapped in the sense that, you know, we have to serve them and take care of them. And so we don't necessarily have the luxury to pivot. But when you don't have that anymore, the question is, well, do you want to build the same thing or do you want to change it a little bit? And that was actually what happened halfway through my business, the marketing company I had for 7 years. About halfway through it, I did get to that point where I said, okay, I've created this marketing company. It's been more reactionary, more reactive, more defined by clients and outsiders than me deciding what it is I wanted to create. So what's the marketing company? If I could start a marketing company from scratch, what would that look like? And so I pivoted the business. And then I, when I ended up shutting down the company, it was another pivot, which essentially came down to the question of, if I could choose to do anything vocationally, would it be to create and sustain a marketing company? And I realized that my answer was no, and I had to go a different direction. And so, but when I did that, it felt like a death. I was so emotionally wrapped up in the business, you know, so many successes and losses along the way and emotions, and that when I finally decided to shut it down, it was emotionally devastating. But it did,
I can imagine.
It did create the context to shift into this freelancing, which has been prosperous for me, and I have more flexibility, I make more money, I have less of the responsibility that I had in the business. So it's kind of a win-win-win. But I couldn't have ever experienced that if I didn't make the pivot when it was scary, when it was hard, and kind of let go of the things I was holding on to so tight.
Did you make this pivot kind of like of your own choice, or did this pivot kind of like events bring it upon you? And like, how did you keep your mental state where it needed to be, like through
the? So in terms of shutting down the business, you mean?
Yeah, because people might be interested in stories like that right now, especially. I imagine others are out there and sometimes maybe making a pivot they have some control over, or maybe making pivots that they don't really have control over right now.
Yeah. So my second book, it's called The Jump, From Chaos to Clarity for Striving Small Business. That I talk about, that's really the heart of the book, is that pivot that I made. And there's a lot to it, but one of the things the year before I shut down, I made a decision that I ended up collaborating with my team to participate in. I said, I don't know the future of our company, but I believe that we need to take a year to reflect on the future. And so we're going to kind of lean into this this visioneering exercise to figure out what's next for us as a company and us as individuals. And so we did that. And about 6 months into the process, I realized that I was going to shut the company down. And there was a lot of time of thinking and talking, and that, you know, when we're really busy, when we're working, when we're doing, it can cloud our ability to just think and to process things, and things that may even that we've already thought through but haven't really processed through in a way that allows us to kind of get to a conclusion or get to an action or a belief. And so anyway, 6 months in, I realized I was going to shut it down, and I've shared that with the team, and we kind of worked through that. And then the emotion of it hit me, and I went through about 3 months of really severe emotional, I would call it like a nervous breakdown. I mean, I was having panic attacks. I was having anxiety, depression. I was on the point where people were saying, I think you should see a doctor, like something's not right. So it was that severe in terms of my response to it. And part of it is, you know, they say when you're about to die, your life flashes before your eyes. And while I wasn't about to die, there was a sense of like ending this thing, the whole journey I'd been on. And as an entrepreneur, it can be so challenging that all the emotions that I had probably bottled down or hadn't really fully realized or worked out were all coming to the surface. They were bubbling up and kind of like a volcano exploding. So I spent about 3 months, and I had really good community around me and friendships and people that loved and cared me for me through it, through a very confusing time.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And people saying and doing things along the way that helped me stay afloat through that challenge. And then the last 3 months of that year, when I transitioned from the business to freelancing, I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew, I kind of imagined myself running a marathon. And at the end of that marathon, there was a crowd of people that were cheering me on to finish. And I couldn't finish alone. But they could help me, encourage me to that finish line. And so I leaned into this idea of meeting with people, and I started meeting with people regularly, probably about a dozen, 10 people a week, for 3 months before I finally shut down the company. And then it was in those 3 months that helped me get clarity on what was going to be next. And it also ended up being an opportunity to establish relationships with people that wanted to hire me. So they said, wait, before you go do whatever you're going to do next, could I hire you to help me with this problem or that problem? And that's what I meant by freelancing found me. So that's a little bit more details, but is that kind of what you were asking about, or was there more something more specific you were thinking about when you asked that?
That's a great story. I mean, just this idea of this is a really big change, and yeah, it's something that you were letting go of that you didn't want to, because I'll guarantee there's lots of people in that situation right now.
Yeah.
Where they were pretty happy with how things were before this crisis hit, or at least, you know, they liked the stability of a certain thing, even if they didn't love every part of it.
Yeah.
And now this change came. And I like your story, this visualization, like a visualization technique of imagining running a marathon to this finish point. I mean, in some regards, you do need some sort of anchor to not just seem like you're in this endless sea of day after day without really any reference points. Mm-hmm. Even if you like kind of pick your own reference point or whatever, was that sort of like the main, I guess, like technique you use to kind of keep yourself stable and bring yourself through to the other side?
Yeah, so a couple of things. One of the things that I realized, and part of what helped inform my decision about shutting the company down, that I think hits at what you're saying, and then I can hit on it a little bit more. I knew that whatever I was going to do with my life, it was going to be hard. There's not an easy road we can take, right? So understanding that work and life is hard, even if it can be meaningful and productive and fruitful, I don't want to put this hard work into something that I'm not 100% into. So what is the thing that I'm 100% into? You know, like that was, and I didn't necessarily have an answer to that at the moment. I just knew it wasn't the thing I was doing. And so that was enough to help me kind of let it go. And, you know, there's, you know, that just a lot that comes into that, I guess, that process in terms of clarity after the fact. I went into the year, it was sort of this leap of faith. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with the concept of the Sabbath. But this idea, you know, in the Hebrew scriptures, they talk about the Sabbath, and as a Christian growing up, that's something, you know, on a Sunday, you kind of honor it, but we don't quite fully understand it. But the idea of the Sabbath is this thing that helps us to rest, to release, to let go, and then to recover. And that recovery helps to re-energize us for the next. So on a week to week basis, you take the Sabbath, one to honor God and to honor, and to take that rest, that acknowledge, that sort of a humble, I'm not able, you know, I'm not a machine that can just run all the time. I have to sort of accept my limitations. And then the next week I'm prepared to kind of hit the ground running. And so that translates on a larger level through life and seasons. You know, we go through a season, and sometimes, you know, you do something long enough, you know, often in my business, if you've heard the myth of Sisyphus, you know, he's punished to push the boulder up the mountain, and then it comes down and he does it again and it comes down. And so that just, it can kind of destroy your soul after a while. And we need that break from that relief from that to go, okay, this isn't working. I need to make a change. And perhaps a lot of times we should be proactively make that change. And in this case I did, I love the team that we had. I love the clients we worked with. I love the work we did. So shutting the company down was really hard because it was so, like you were kind of alluding to, it was a good thing. And we were even making money. You know, it wasn't like it was all bad. And I just, you know, in the earlier years, it was hard, but then we did a pivot to make it a better company. And so I actually ended up walking away from the better company than when I probably could have walked away from the more troublesome one. So I don't know if that answers your question or not, but that's a little more detail.
Yeah, definitely. Just that story of that transition, you know, kind of to pivot a little bit now in the conversation,
yeah.
Like fast forwarding more to like what you're seeing today. I've seen a lot of this. We talked about it with some people in the podcast about a lot of people do have a bit more time. And so you can put more time into marketing and kind of getting your other things in order. And I see some people who have less time because, you know, knowing how to automate processes and do computer programming kind of tends to push people to a very busy point right now because people want help doing that. For either of those cases, at some point we all expect, like, you know, whether your curve is up or your curve is down, at some point things will probably start to normalize again.
Yeah.
How are you seeing yourself and others as kind of also looking ahead and preparing for what things might look like? Because I imagine if you're doing a lot more marketing, you might have a lot more business than you had before when things normalize, possibly.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that comes down to this idea of just deciding now so when that happens later, I can just act. And you know, talking about the one, this idea that you get a client and then all of a sudden they're your only client and then all of a sudden they're all your income. The same happens with work. And that's kind of what I experienced in my business is, you know, I went from, and the idea of the Sabbath was I went from working, you know, during the week to then working on Saturdays to then working on Sundays, then to working like all the time and working every time, you know, I was always working. And I never had a boundary and I never enforced those boundaries. And so life and demands of life just continued to creep up. And it wasn't until I sort of like Gandalfed it and, you know, you shall not pass, you know, these are my boundaries and you cannot pass them. And so as a freelancer, I have a start date, a start time and an end time every day. And you know, you can be a little flexible with that, but that's kind of my boundaries and I enforce those. And so in the chaos, that's going to be pushed on from a variety of directions, our personal life, our work, you know, community, whatever it might be. And so if the thing that's nice about the boundary is I might not be following my boundaries, but I feel the tension that I'm not following them. And so when I pivoted, as the crisis unfolded, I started doing my podcast and I was doing all these episodes. Like I was expecting things to take a downturn and they did for a little bit, but then they took an upturn and I started to get more clients and I started to have clients up to it. And so all of a sudden I had a full workload. And then I'm also doing this podcast and I'm doing like 2 or 3 episodes a week. I'm going, man, this is not sustainable. So I felt that tension. And so what I had to do is go, okay, I have to move some stuff. My paid client work is good. So I'm going to lean into that. And I'm going to shift my podcast to be once a week. And then I might even have to go less than that if I need to. So I had to sort of recalibrate, you know, it's okay to have like a week or a month where things are out of whack, but I just have to use that tension to kind of get things back in order so that it doesn't break me down or break my family down or break something else down. But if we don't have clarity on what those boundaries are, then when things do get chaotic, we won't know how to sort them out and how to put them in their place. So does that answer your question? Or is that helpful?
Yeah. You know, something I like about that idea. So basically you're talking about right now when things aren't so crazy is a really good chance to set boundaries because this really affects especially freelancers a lot.
Yeah.
It can happen to full-time people where there's demands put on you because there's a project deadline or something, but I think you have a little less control there. Whereas with freelancers, you hope you have control. But the problem for all of us as freelancers, when you get in a situation where there's this big field of opportunity, it's easy to go crazy. I mean, more time is more success and more money. If I do a good job for more people, that's more referrals. It's easy to kind of lose sight of that. And the idea of setting some boundaries now makes sense. And what I like about one of the ways you're talking about doing is not being overly rigid, because rigid systems tend to kind of get broken. It almost sounds like your way of doing it is not so much to have rigid rules, but rather alarms. Like a little dashboard alarm. It's like, hey, this alarm's been going off every day for like 3 weeks. Man, that's too long. I got to do something about it. And so you let yourself have a little bit of room, but have the alarm keep going off.
Yeah. And that's the, I really like that idea of the alarms and, you know, like the, on the car, you've got the engine lights on, you know, and there are different types of alarms, right? Some are more severe than others. And I do, we don't want a system that's tyrannical where it loses its purpose and benefit, you know, it needs to be working for us. And so sometimes it helps us see things, you know, I think a lot of our struggles that we go through, we all go through them, but I think part of it is knowing quickly when we're facing a problem, to see the problem quickly and then be able to respond to it quickly. So instead of, like you said, instead of waiting 3 weeks, if I can have an alarm that tells me that right away and adapt within a few days, that's a lot better than 3 months, you know? But the fact that I do it at all is a win. So even if it took me 3 months, that's okay. You know, that's a stepping stone.
Do you have sort of a review process you keep yourself through, like a nightly review on how the day went, or weekly? What is your way of having an alarm?
Yeah. So time is probably the big one, you know, having when am I starting and ending my day. I have for my work, I do bill hourly and I do batches of hours. So usually it's batches of 10 hours. And so I have a goal in terms of hitting my annual income goal. I have a certain amount of income I need to earn each month and a certain amount of income that I need to earn each day. So my goal, my financial goal, and then I have a time boundary. How many hours am I willing, do I want to work per week to accumulate that amount, right? And so each day I have a number of hours that I'm trying to get to hit those goals and stay within my boundaries. And so that's really my focus metric, my primary thing. And then, you know, my start and end time for each day is another one. And then I don't work on Saturday or Sunday right now. There might, you know, talking about rigidity, there might be a Saturday where clients like, we got to launch a website. And it's like, okay, we can do that. Let's plan that out. Another thing that I do, and this is also really helpful, is I take off one day each month during a work day. So this would be next week, next Tuesday. Usually it's like one of the last days of the month. And essentially what I do is I plan my month to work, be able to get everything done that I need to get done without that day. And then that day is just like a me fun day. So I might play games or go see a movie or eat out or meet with a friend or whatever. But it does two things. One, it's an milestone or an obstacle or an opportunity to kind of look forward to. Like, this is something fun to do that I sort of a reward. But it's also like, I better get my stuff done. So when I have that day, I'm not like thinking about work, you know? So it's a dual motivating ritual. It's maybe a good way to put it. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's great. Thanks.
Yeah.
Have you heard of Atwood's Law? He says that anything that can be built in JavaScript eventually will be built in JavaScript. And that includes mobile apps. You can build awesome mobile apps and Apple TV and other apps with React Native. Come check us out every week as we talk about some of the ins and outs of building mobile apps with JavaScript and with React on React Native Radio. You can find it at reactnativeradio.com.
I've actually got a question for you that it's taking things in a slightly different direction, but something you said earlier piqued my interest in terms of the marketing side of things. So you were talking about how you are marketing rapidly, putting out 3 episodes a week of your podcast, and then you hit capacity and you've had to scale it back to once a week. Now, one of the rules you hear all the time in marketing circles is that you have to be consistent. And I think that this idea of being consistent works really well for a larger company that can be consistent. But when you're freelancing, this idea of consistency can be really tough because you hit capacity and then all of a sudden you've just got too much work and something has to give. But at the same time, like you consult in marketing and you're doing that same thing. So I'm wondering, what is the trade-off between being consistent, having an episode that comes out every Tuesday at exactly 3 p.m. versus being more flexible around your own capacity. Are there major drawbacks in doing it the second way, or is it better for freelancers? How is that working?
Yeah, so I definitely agree that consistency is a huge factor. There's a compounding effect of doing something regularly over and over time. But I also am a believer, and in some cases, it may trump the consistency and the idea of having a library. So if I publish 20 episodes, and I could either do that all at once or over 20 weeks, you know, there is a benefit to publishing all 20 right away because of SEO. I can still email them out once a week. You know, there's no limitation on how I promote them. So, but they're done, you know, so I could even schedule them out over 20 weeks if I wanted to do that. But I do, as a sort of as the SEO specialist, I know the value of having a library of content, and I know that time helps increase the value of that library and get indexed on Google and whatnot. And I also, that content can be shared and reshared on different channels. So so there is that aspect of it. But again, there is something to the consistency in terms of having an audience and staying with them and growing. But I think as a freelancer, as in terms of that being something that helps me, you know, get new clients, what I found is that it's helpful to remind people that we exist, that we're alive, that we're still doing work, you know. But it doesn't necessarily have to be a new thing. It doesn't have to be a new piece of content that we put up there, or even our own. You know, it could be somebody else's that we're sharing. So I've had clients that, you know, I've stayed connected with on LinkedIn, and I'm just staying active on LinkedIn in different ways, and they just keep seeing me. And then a year later, they're like, okay, let's work together. You know, so it's there's benefits and challenges with either. I do think, if you do launch a bunch of stuff and then you have a long gap of time, and then you launch it again and you have a long gap of time, it is harder to build. But again, if you create the type of content that's more evergreen, then you have a library that's worthwhile, you know, that can overcome some of those gaps. And the idea is that you do that enough that you get to the point where you can have that type of consistency, or the resources to equip that. So is that helpful, or is that?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And to be honest, that's what I've been doing as well. I mean, that just seemed more natural to me. And so I've always struggled with this idea of you have to publish at exactly the same time every week, because I've gone for the library approach.
Yeah.
So I've got, I've got about 150 different blog posts on my website now.
Yeah,
and that's great. They're all like really content rich topics. And what I do now is I have an email that goes out every week. And even though I've written so many posts, I've kind of got them scheduled up on the email. So yeah. it was a project rather than something that I'm having to revisit every week. It was a project. We got all of this done. I was able to do it during this pandemic slowdown. I was able to write all that content, and now it's just going out. So mm-hmm. I'm able to schedule it onto social media. I'm able to send it via email. I'm able to send it using, so one of the techniques that I use is I share my content through paid Google display advertising. So I'm able to have all of those being mm-hmm. shown as display. So I've got my prospects knowing that I exist all the time because they're seeing all of my articles. And so for me, I found that library approach worked really well. And like my SEO has been picking up as a result, but still you do hear a lot of advice, especially when it comes to social media, podcasting, like anything that you develop an audience. They're saying it's got to be the same time every week, or you've got to have it planned out so that it's going to be really consistent. And that voice in the back of your head is hard to kind of think, well, is that the right context for me? Yes or no? And I agree. It's probably not a good idea to have huge breaks between things, but if you can.
Yeah. And part of it.
Freelancers work in seasons. I think I'll call that a season.
Yeah. And that's, you know, season to create, season to wait, season to, One thing I have seen with YouTubers is exactly what you're describing is they, the tension that they feel to post, whether it's weekly or daily or monthly, it becomes tyrannical in the sense that it breaks them, and which then affects the content. And so you have these YouTubers that, you know, have these breakdowns on and they do a video about it. And so I've seen a bunch of those. But I think, you know, when your income comes from it, it is harder. So I think as a freelancer who blogs, who podcasts, but my income doesn't come from that, I'm in a different position than someone whose income comes from that. And because it can be a lot more, I have a lot more flexibility. But if my income does come from that, then I hopefully have more resources to dedicate to it. So there's a kind of a trade-off. But if my income doesn't come from it, then I can post whenever I want. And if I, you know, it's not like a client's paying me to do that episode or that article. So I could do it when I want. I don't know. Thoughts?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense to me. Certainly the people who are advertising as part of their show are in a really different boat.
Yeah.
Completely different situation because they do need to have that consistency. Otherwise, they're not able to show a return on investment to the people that are advertising with them. Whereas if you're selling your own products or services, I think you can go with that season approach, and it works pretty well in mm-hmm. from my experience. But, you know, obviously there's people that have a different opinion on each side.
Yeah. But I would also say, you know, the reality is, even if I posted once a week or every day, you know, there's only 20% even of my audience or probably less that is going to see every single thing. And so my thought is, how do I get my audience to see all of it, as opposed to how do I get all of my audience to see 20% of it, you know? And so to be more thorough, the consistency is not as important for that. And the consistency in creating new things, the consistency is more important in just having a process to thoroughly distribute that content in different channels and multiple times and multiple ways. And the idea is not to, get a fire hose of content that they could never consume, but it's rather to get them to consume all the content. So
I couldn't agree more with that, especially as a freelancer. Since I started putting all of my content on Google Display, mm-hmm. what I found is I will send that content to my remarketing list. So that's the people that have already enjoyed my content in the past.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's great. I'm getting impressions to all of the people that matter.
Yeah.
And then as a result, the people that are interested in that particular topic are clicking through. So because it's a remarketing list, I'll be getting click-through rates of 10-20% on a new piece of content.
And it's probably cheaper than because
the remarketing ads are click.
Yeah, yeah.
10 cents a click. It's fantastic. So I'm able to nurture the relationship with my prospects, my clients, people who are referral partners. I'm able to maintain that relationship by having a library mm-hmm. and not worrying about scheduling it, because I realized that in myself, scheduling it just wasn't working for me. It wasn't working for my personality. Yeah. I just couldn't feed that. It's not that I'm disorganized. It's just that I've got too many ideas all the time and I'm always changing things up and I get excited about things and I get into that and then I lose interest. So for me, having that library and then having a really good way of distributing it.
Yeah.
It's made and more sense to me, and that's worked for me.
Because if someone has never heard of you, never met with you, they go to your website. You said how many articles you have? 120?
About 150 or so articles 150. On my website. They're not going to read them all at once. No, they're only going to read one or two. And then the rest of them they'll see over time through the Google Ads display.
Yeah. So that's probably the experience of most people that go to your website is that. So the consistency isn't as important. And it sounds like with the remarketing, you've got a perfect way to consistently maintain that relationship. And so I think that's what's cool about the idea of the kind of latching onto the principle that I talked about earlier is if you can figure out what you're trying to accomplish, then you can actually find a way to do that that better fits who you are. And isn't a lot of the advice that's given, it's it's told in a way that lacks the principle. And so when you don't take the principle with you, you're just doing a tactic, but you don't understand its purpose or its reasoning. And we end up misapplying tactics all the time. So I really like what you're doing, because that's a cool, clever way to accomplish the same thing.
How about you, Joel? Is there anything else that you want to finish up on? Or should we go to picks?
Yeah, let's go on to picks.
Awesome. Now, Joel, do you have any picks this week? What's your
pick? I do. I've got a very simple pick. So this is a JBL Flip 4 speaker that I got a few years ago. And this is a simple little thing. It's kind of goofy to have as a pick, but it stands up vertical, so it doesn't use up much space on the desk. And it's actually connected from top to bottom. So this thing has a surprising amount of bass, and it is 100% waterproof.
Cool.
Which is great for me. I do occasionally go sailing. And so having on the boat, to be able to have some music stuff with me, not worry about a little water that gets in the boat and tries to damage things, has been fantastic. And so for me, this has been a really great speaker.
Cool.
I thought you were worried about spilling coffee on it or something for a little while there, since you said it was on your desk.
That does happen too.
That sounds really cool. How about yourself, Jason? Do you have a pick this week?
Yeah, I'll throw a couple out there. So I'm reading a book called Guns, Germs, and Steel by Jared Diamond, and it's about the fate of human society. So he tracks really the last 13,000 years or so of human history and why have some been more successful? Why have some civilizations been more successful than others? And what can we learn from that? So that's a timely book because of the, guns, germs, and steel. So it talks about pandemics as well and how those affect civilization. The other thing is an app that I use called letterboxd.com. It's letter and then boxd.com. So there's no E in the end. But it's a cool website or app for the phone that lets you track the movies you watch and rate and review them. And then you can, it's almost like a social media for movie lovers. So.
You know, one of the things I really loved about that Guns, Germs, and Steel book from your pick, the whole concept that all societies think that they've come in and they've shaped the land and made it do what they need to. And Jared Steele just completely blows out of the water, says really it's the land that shapes the people and determines what kind of society they'll form. Yeah. I thought that was just a fantastic idea flipped on its head.
Yeah, essentially the context influenced it more. And it kind of ties into the idea of, standing on the shoulders of giants, that we are success, and what we see is actually often more the things underneath us that we don't even know are there. And this pandemic is actually, interestingly enough, revealing a lot of the things we take for granted or that were there that are not there or that are changing, So that's, I'm looking forward to finishing that book.
Sounds like a great book. I'm going to have to read that. I've got so many books on the go at any given time, but always happy to add to my pile.
So how about you?
In terms of my picks, so a couple of weeks ago, I told everyone that I got bitten. Well, actually, it's not a bite, it's a sting. So I got stung by an inch ant, and I'd been watching 72 Most Dangerous Animals of Australia with my son.
The very next day
I got stung by this ant, and it turns out that this ant is one of the ones that causes people to have heart attacks and all sorts of things like that. So I actually freaked out a bit when it happened, because last time I got stung by one of these ants, it was excruciatingly itchy for 3 weeks. And it's just the kind of thing where you scratch it and it just gets worse and worse. And I was panicking a little bit. But a friend of mine, and so it was happening, it was itchy for a week. And then a friend of mine said, oh, you've got to try this Magnoplasm. So it's actually an Australian product, but I'm sure you can get something in the US. It's magnesium sulfate glycerol.
It's a green?
Yeah. And what it does is it actually sucks things out of the skin. So it's actually used for splinters as well. I've never heard of it before. You can use it for, I'm so sorry, everyone. My dog's just come in and shaking. So you actually put it on the area that is problematic, cover it in a bandage. 12 hours later, you take it off and do it again. And it sucked all of the venom out of my finger and the itch just went away. And I couldn't believe it. I was so happy with that. because I'd experienced it before. Last time I got stung by one of these ants, I stepped on one and it was right underneath my foot. And every time I walked, it was just awful. And this one was on my finger. So this worked. So if it works for splinters as well, I'm thinking this is now going to be like,
yeah. Have you ever watched the YouTube channel Brave Wilderness with Coyote Peterson?
No, I haven't, but we're getting into all these things for myself.
Well, he went on the sting tour where he went and got stung by different wasps that were more and more severe. And he ended up on one of them. He used the stuff you're talking about. So.
Oh, okay. I know that if I get stung by some Australian critter that I've got the right stuff. So it was a good friend of mine recommended it and I'd never ever heard of it before, but now it's got pride of place in my bathroom.
Awesome.
So that's one I'm recommending. And the other thing is I mentioned before that I was reading a book by Dan Kennedy. It's actually called No BS, Ruthless Management of People and Profits, No Holds Barred, Kick Butt, Take No Prisoners Guide to... Oh, no, I'm doing the Really Getting Rich one. That's the wrong one. Oh, no, it is. Yeah, it is. That is the right one. Take No Prisoner's Guide to Really Getting Rich. He has very long titles, so it's no wonder that I couldn't remember exactly what the book was called. It's a really good book. It's actually really funny. I'm laughing along with it. I'm listening to it on audio at the moment.
Is he read it or is it someone else?
It's someone else's narrating it. But it's actually a really long one. It's like 10 hours.
Oh, wow.
But it's so funny because he's kind of... being contrarian on everything, and it's quite direct. And a lot of the things in there are just really obvious in that he says, you got to focus on profit and you got to get rid of this. And that's where I heard about the most dangerous number is one.
Oh, okay.
But it's a really good book. I'm enjoying it and I'm laughing along with it too. So,
well, that's good.
It's a good one.
Fun learning.
That's right. Alrighty, well, we've done our picks and had a great chat. Thanks so much, Jason, for coming. How can we reach you again? How can our audience find you?
Yeah, so if you visit my website, jasonscottmontoya.com, that's jasonscottmontoya.com, or just Google my name, Jason Scott Montoya, that'll pull up number one. On there, I blog, I've got the podcast, you can check those out, lots of resources about freelancing, the pandemic. You can check out my books, either Path of the Freelancer or The Jump on Amazon. They're available either Kindle or paperback. If you are a freelancer and interested, you can check out pathofthefreelancer.com. I've got online resources, videos. I've got a toolbox repository of things, to use to help navigate just freelancing for any type of freelancer. So pathofthefreelancer.com. And I'm on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram. And so you can find me, just type, look my name, Jason Scott Montoya, and you'll find me on those. And that covers it.
Sounds like you've gone back to being really busy, being on all those channels.
That's the nice thing about the library is I can share the library, and I've probably got close to four or 500 articles on there that I've been writing since 2014. So sharing it takes like a year to reshare everything, So
fantastic. Yeah, good strategy. That works really well. Great. Well, has anyone got anything else that they want to finish up with before we end today?
I think that's it. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I appreciate it. It was fun. Got to share some good stuff and learn to listen in and to you both. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.